The next case on our calendar is 982543, 982610, Dennis Marshall versus Dr. Zambillo. Mr. Norman.
Good morning, may I please record my name is Forrest Norman. I represent Dr. Ortiz. The sole purpose brings us before this court today is to construe the extension mechanism of the 1 year statute of limitation in medical malpractice cases. There are absolutely no questions of fact in this case. In fact, I'm glad the police note that the appellee and the advocate joined in by a statement of facts. So we are dealing with a very well-established universe. What happened here is that during the 1 year period within which the plaintiff had commenced the medical malpractice claim, she filed a 180-day letter to gain an extension of the statute of limitations.
Was the second 180-day letter filed within the 1 year statute of limitations?
Yes, sir. They were both filed timely within the 1 year. The first was filed at approximately the 10-month mark. The second was filed at the 11-month mark.
Okay.
As well known, the statute 2305.11b1 provides the 1 year statute of limitations, and then, unlike any other statute of limitations, provides the mechanism of extension.
Does a 180-day letter cut off the year that you get in malpractice? In other words, what if someone sent a 180-day letter in May and the accident happened in January? What would we go by? Would we go by the letter or by the statute?
Clearly by the statute.
Correct.
The court's already directly addressed
that. So you can't, right.
Muller versus Fasley.
You can't cut off the right.
You can't shorten the 1 year statute.
Right.
So they are given the 1 year, and then they are given this extra mechanism to permit an attorney to review the file before filing suit. And that's the purpose of this mechanism, was to reduce frivolous lawsuits when an attorney is presented with a case right before the expiration of the statute of limitations. In other words, if his potential client shows up on his doorstep at 11 months and says, I think I have a claim, and it's a relatively complex case, the plaintiff's lawyer needs an opportunity to get medical records and conduct a review other than filing first and asking questions later. The way that the statute is worded is there is the sending and receipt of this letter that gives the extension. It's not an automatic 6-month extension. It's tacked on the end of the 1 year period, but rather it is triggered from the receipt of notice. That's, I think, a critical point in this case. It is the receiving of notice by the defendant or the potential defendant that triggers this 180-day period.
Now, has both of these letters complied with the statute as to their contents? Did that first letter fully comply?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
So there's no doubt.
There's no question.
No question.
Correct.
Both letters completely complied with the statutory language for extending or for triggering that 180-day period.
How do you interpret the statute to square with your propositional law? Number one, or your propositional law, where you say provides a claim 180 days from the time it's invoked to commence the suit. It can only be invoked once. What does it say in the statute can only be invoked once?
Well, the straightforward reading of the statute shows, well, it's written in the singular, first clause. The statute uses, gives to the person who is subject to the claim written notice, singular, that the claimant's considering bringing an action on that. And that action may be commenced at any time within 180 days after the notice is so given. So it contemplates single notice. It does not say notice or notices or the latest notice so given.
All right, stop there just a minute. Don't we have a statute 1.1? I don't know. What is it?
1.11.
Well, it says something like the singular is a plural and the plural is a singular. I thought so. Go ahead, though.
Not for person or persons, but as far as notice, if you look at every other statute relating to notice provisions, where the act is consummated by receipt of a notice, that's the effective and operative portion of the giving of notice. else.
Well, let me stop you there. If the purpose of the giving of the notice to a doctor by a plaintiff's lawyer that I'm anticipating, my client's anticipating filing an action against you for malpractice, if that's the purpose of the statutes, how is the doctor, how is your client harmed by, there's a reference to your brief, but I'd like to have you explain it, how is your client harmed by having received a notice, one notice and then another notice by another lawyer sometime not too long after that? In fact, how is your client harmed by that, by getting two notices that he may be sued for malpractice?
First and foremost, assuming that the statute of supply is written, the second notice is a nullity because it does not negate the effect of the first letter, which says, and the statute says after the first letter is sent, you must commence suit within 180 days of that letter. So nothing stops that. So my doctor is prejudiced by being subjected to an untimely suit.
By a few days here, I think.
Right, but the statute would be even if, for example, perhaps by way of analogy, if you have an LPX case, plaintiff files a complaint 6 months long, they have 1 year to serve that complaint. If for some reason they choose not to instruct the courts to have the complaint served right away, but don't have it. They have 1 year to do it. Now, they can do it at the 11-month mark if the service is perfected. This suit is adequately commenced. But if they wait until the 13-month mark, they're on time, and that suit is not then commenced. The statutes are there. They need to be complied with.
So that, except as Doug has pointed out, there's nothing expressed here in the statute. There's no express statement in the statute that one may not serve two of these notices. You, by implication, you're saying by the structure of the words and so forth that's the implication. But again, the damage to your client or to a doctor is that in your instance, the doctor at the end of the period, the 180 days from the first notice, he thought he was clear. He thought there won't be a suit filed against me, and indeed he finds that there is going to be one filed. Is that the
That is one element of it, Your Honor. Another is that the purpose of the 1 year statute of limitations is not one fold, or rather two fold, or three fold. Another significant portion of this statute is the shortest statute of limitations. It's not a 2 year statute of limitations, as you'll find in your typical personal injury case, but it's 1 year. The intent is to bring a medical malpractice case soon.
Since the fact is straightforward, I'm going to change the facts for you because the rule that you announced was the promise that you took up when you remember the first facts matter would be first off, the letter just didn't apply.
Sends a 180-day letter, which extends the statute by 5 months at the 4-month mark. into that extension. The first lawyer comes back and says, I'm sorry, I don't think that you got a claim, but you might want to see lawyers B.C.
Well, you could have that, but let's keep it both letters, both lawyers' consultation coming within 1 year. So second letter, the second referral or the second opinion, this person who thinks they have a medical claim goes still within the 1 year statute, the second lawyer, but now the second lawyer has only got 4 weeks, 2 weeks. Clearly, it's 180-day letter to make an evaluation. Under what you would like us to hold, that lawyer is going to really be precluded from utilizing that.
He will probably be precluded from using it, the same as if the plaintiff showed up at the door right at the end of the 180 days. The first lawyer has sent the 180-day letter.
But wouldn't the doctor be better off if the second lawyer, now we're already dealing with something one lawyer said, I don't think so. If you got a letter instead of you got a lawsuit.
We get to the law of diminishing returns, right. Your Honor. After a while, we're not really furthering the purpose of the statute. And we have to balance the fact that the statute of limitations really does contemplate bringing a suit quickly. And that is why this mechanism is triggered for the sending of a 180-day letter and not an automatic six-month extension.
I thought the public policy of the 180-day letter was that this will ultimately result in far less causes of action, actually, than far.
Yes, Your Honor. We're reducing the loan lending.
Sure.
The purpose of the statute is to at least afford one review. There's nothing in that that says we contemplate multiple reviews. The plaintiff doesn't have an inherent right to multiple reviews extending indefinitely. That's why we have a limitation on the claim. Now, one of the reasons why the medical malpractice statute is short is because medical technology and standard of care is constantly evolving. The further away we are from the event, the more difficult it is to recreate facts, to recreate the standard of care. What I'm seeing is wildly differentiating opinions now 5 years ago, even as far as what constitutes certain standard of care issues. So there is a benefit to bringing the suit as soon as possible, and that benefit inures to both parties, both to the plaintiff and the defense, because what we want to do is get the truth and we want to get it at it quickly. And that purpose of the statute of limitations is furthered by requiring the plaintiff to act in due diligence in bringing his or her suits. That's really it in a nutshell. The entire purpose of this statute is it benefits both parties, and simply by applying it as written and asking the plaintiff to comply with due diligence and statute of limitations does not prejudice the plaintiff in any way, shape, or form. Provides for an adequate review to be conducted. And the end point of this limitation provides an end to the litigation threat of judgment. So, if we construe the statute as written in its singular and apply the mechanism as it was drafted, it works quite well to protect the rights of both parties. And there's nothing ambiguous in this statute, and there is nothing unconstitutional about it for any statute of limitations.
Counselor, I wasn't making reference to 1.11. I was making reference to 1.43, which says in Part A, the singular includes the plural, and the plural includes the singular.
I think that applies to party or parties.
Doesn't say that, because B says words of one gender include the other genders. That's B. And then C does something else.
Considering that would not negate the requirement that they comply with the first notice, in other words, commence suit within 180 days of the time this first notice was given.
Words in the present tense include the future, A, B, and C.
they'll say that even if multiple notices would technically not be excluded by the statute, which I think they are because of the nature of the mechanism here, the intent of having this type of mechanism is to get this 180-day review going, and just require diligence. That intent is furthered by construing the statute solely in the singular and not in the plural, and asking them to then commence suit within 180 days furthers the purpose of this statute. I see that my time has
expired. Thank you, Mr. Norman.
May I have 30 seconds to the answer?
You may have 30 seconds. Mr. Gimel.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Chief Justice and Justice of the Court, good morning. My name is Frank Gimel, and I represent Gladys Marshall, the appellee in this case. I think that essentially there are three arguments that militate in favor of my position. And I would summarize them as essentially the grammatic construction argument, the legislative purpose argument, and what I think of as the public policy argument.
So you're abandoning that argument. You didn't think that first letter was a bit deficient.
Well, Your Honor, I think better practice is to cite the statute, is to tell the doctor that I'm serving this notice, you are intending to attend the statute. Certainly, there are enough decisions out there that parse letters that often claim and parse letters that often action, specifically action for medical malpractice. But I didn't think my best argument lay there. But I don't think that first letter was best practice.
Are you conceding if a second notice is sent and is yet within 2 months before the statute of limitations runs, that the 180 days runs from the date of the second letter?
A receipt of the statute, yes, sir.
Not from the date of the statute of limitations.
No, I think that's plain, and that for me is part of what I think of as the legislative purpose argument, because the General Assembly meant to give us 180 days, but the problem with the scheme is that it's very difficult for prudent counsel to avail this land of all 180 days.
Well, if you are not clearly arguing under these circumstances that anybody who sends a 180-day letter has a total of 18 months. You're not arguing that. Well, then why wouldn't the first letter suffice? Why shouldn't the rule be the same for the first letter?
Well, I think this case, support one argument, that's fair, and that is, for whatever reason, the original counsel chose to serve that first letter, and whatever his intentions, the effect could have well been that he gave up 60 days, one-third of that period.
Yeah, but your argument would be, following your argument to its logical conclusion, if you send the letter 1 day before the statute runs, a third letter, then you'd have 6 more months from that date. So you have the 18 months.
I think there's a potential, sir, to extend the statute by 180 days from the date that the original statute expires. And I don't think there's any scenario under which I would advocate the plaintiff ever gets any more than that.
No, I'm not talking about that. That would still be 180 days. I mean, it would still be 18 months. What I'm asking you is, you don't run the 6 months from the end of the statute, you run it from the date of the last letter.
Oh, yes, sir.
So you would, in effect, in most cases where the letter is sent within the 1 year, you would have less than a total of 18 months.
Yes, sir, and I think that's a problem that's inherent in the scheme.
Okay.
Not only do I think the cure for health would be...
But then take the next step. If you find that happening to you, then you just file another letter on the day before the statute runs, and then you do have 18 months.
I wouldn't want to advocate that, and I was speaking at a seminar, sir.
Well, but your argument is it goes from the date of the last letter, didn't it?
Yes.
Within the statute.
Although I would point out to the court that it does seem that the cases that have come to the appellate court on this issue do frequently have a problem in the past. There's a question about service of one or more of the notices. In this case, we have change of counsel. I'm not advocating, essentially, I'm not arguing that an argument that proves too much and arguing that we can never retroactively serve a year and then
have it removed. So you're saying, let me make sure I understand your argument. You're saying that if you had not filed this case within 180 days of the date of your letter, even though the statute had not yet run, you'd still be out.
And you're also saying, following up with Justice Douglas, that two letters is okay, but three is too much?
Well, first it's easy for me to say that.
And what possible standard is there for that? We need standards because that's why the rule.
One response might be that it doesn't seem that a three-letter case can reach a court that I know of. I think I feel compelled by reason to concede that I can't be proving here a mechanism that results in a reduction on service that's not served or worth.
But our rule would have to be runs from the last letter, and that would allow three, four. You know, if somebody started early on writing letters, it could happen. We'd be approving that, wouldn't we?
Well, I guess I see in these cases, especially the court's unseating rules that seem to go beyond the facts of the case. And I'm not sure that my best citizens want to be entitled to agree, at least by the proposition that
But we aren't ruling over the facts of this case. We're not settling the case here. We're settling the law.
Frankly, I have to concede that I think probably the proposition to have a case that might in fact need the court to enunciate the rules that would permit the
That's exactly what your proposition is. And that's why I'm here, surprised to hear you concede to my questions that it's 180 days from your last notice. You say, or a party timely files more than one notice, the statute of limitations does not bar prosecution of an action for malpractice commenced within 180 days of the latest of these notices. So it could be five. And you could do it on the day just before the statute. Why would you concede anything else? If the design of this thing was to really give 12 months plus 8 plus 6 months, why would you
concede? Well, I guess, Roger, because the wording of the statute seems to make the extended effect of not service. And I think that the lower courts are focused on that for rightly or wrongly, and that's the way practitioners look at it.
I read the appellant's brief. He said that Edens, our case of Edens, resolves that issue that we've held. I think, and I didn't look at it yet, but that we've held that the 100-day notice does not shorten the statute, that you still have a year, even though you've given 180-day notice, would seem to shorten that. That wouldn't make much sense to shorten the statute of limitations, would it?
Well, no, indeed, that's the way I understand that he's Chief Justice. It's always just given prematurely, or that is more than 180 days from the running of the one-year statute, the punishment does shorten the one-year statute.
Oh, I thought I misunderstood your answer to Doug's question. I thought you were saying it did.
That's
the way.
Because you said earlier, what the General Assembly really thought it was doing or intended to do when they put in the 180 day letter was to make the real statute
Well, I think it's close enough to say just to answer your question, but I do think they intended to give us 180 days, but I think they gave us a difficult mechanism for invoking it in some question about how that period runs. And I do think that the lower courts and practitioners do seem to read that to say that it's 180 days from the date of service. The date of service is not only service is not only important for invoking the statute, but the date of service is critical as well.
You say here in your station. Attorney visitation 109, then I'll call 180 notice, but I'll be ready to send 3 months, 3 months, 4. Just on the case that I'm doing things, 3 months, 3 months, and work on the case, 3 more months. Essentially, what becomes the value of the purpose of the 180 notice is to be part of the
practitioners calendar the, you know, to file a 180 day letter right before the statute runs to get the maximum, unless they're, you know, they know that that's, it's just like we calendar the original statute in every case. We calendar it, we know that's serious. And yeah, when 180 day letter, we know we calendar when that better go out.
I think the problem, Justice, is that I have much more patient liability that is along the block between my office and the courthouse than I do in the mechanics of service on the justice defendant.
So you'd stop, you wouldn't use a 180 day letter?
Well, I wouldn't diary it for a week.
Well, I don't mean a week, but we know very close in time so that you have plenty of time to get receipt service, but you get your full 18 months or close to it.
You
it's all a matter of calendaring. It's all a matter of making sure you meet your date. If your client comes in late, you know, then you might only have that one time to deal with it.
Well, that's your point, Your Honor. I guess what I would simply say is that there are some mechanics involved, and sometimes when you try to serve your defendant by certified mail, you'll get service for you alone.
But I'm just saying this is not unique to the practice of law. Practitioners deal with statutes of limitations and meeting them all the time.
So is it common in this type of practice to initially send some other type of letter other than the notice to the potential target of litigation?
Well, yes, I think it is good practice.
In your brief, I mean, there's no question here that before this court, you conceded that that first letter is a effective triggering letter.
Your Honor, of course, there was the dramatic construction argument, and as you can see, the courts in Johnson, the court in Associated Below, and also the case involved all of us, to the article used to modify the phrase written notice. Two courts have come down on my side. In addition, there's the legislative policy argument. I think we've talked about that a good deal, and the question and answer is amongst us. But in addition, there's the public policy argument, and I would urge the court to be mindful of the reasoning of the 8th District in this case. We're dealing with death and limitation. It is remedial and it is true liberally so that there can be a decision on the merits in these cases and not a decision that's simply a procedure or a technicality. I think that the FLE's proposition of law in this case would affect not only the legislative intent here, but also the public policy.
If you had a case where 180-day notice was served 5 days after the occurrence. And then you see the statute running 10 months, you send another one. You have not filed suit within the first one. Are you out? Because of Edens. Only because of Edens you're not out.
I think that we call that premature. It's irrelevant. I would urge the court that the answer to the certified question is a negative and adopt the appellee's proposition of law, namely that in cases where one timely 180-day notice has been served on the defendant under the statute, the plaintiff is still to commit timely medical malpractice action. We have 180 days of service on that second notice.
From the last notice.
From the last notice.
Thank you, Mr. Norman. Mr. Norman, you may take your seat.
Your Honor, one quick comment as far as grammatical construction needs to be consistent with the actual purpose of the statute and the way the words function. You may be able to pound a square peg into a round hole, but if it's not what the mechanism intends, then that grammatical construction is erroneous. And I think that construing multiple 180-day letters as being contemplated by the statute runs contrary to the public policy purpose of the statute to get the case going and get it quickly.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You've been advised for opinion. The marshal, please appear in court.